We're on a mission from God.
And now for something completely different.
This is Pastor Jolly John Lukumsky, and I have with me
Pastor Matt Youngblood Clark, coming to you from Ascension Lutheran Church, where I serve as pastor in beautiful South St. Louis.
And we are wrestling with the basics, and I tell you what, I'm so excited. We're way into the Easter season now, the first Saturday after Easter. And we've gone all in with the whole artificial intelligence thing. From here on out, we are going to be artificially intelligent enhanced, although that might not be the right term because that implies that there was some intelligence before the whole enhanced thing. But seriously, my grandson Brian, he convinced me that we need to try. Are you using any of the AI agents, Matt, at all, like ChatGPT or anything like that?
It's funny you should say that. I printed off my sermon here at Ascension, and our church secretary just happened to pick it up, and she was reading it, and there was enough typos for her to know that it was not AI generated, John.
Yes, that is the test.
I'm my imperfections. this is just my intelligence that I have to work with, John.
But you know, the AI is getting so bright now, they're actually putting errors in just to fool you. so you don't think it's artificial intelligence. That's how smart they are.
Yeah, type my term paper and include a few typos.
Exactly. So it looks like I actually did it.
Oh, boy. What a world.
So Claude, have you tried Claude?
I have not tried Claude. I've heard of it, John, but I've seen it advertised, but no, I have not tried Claude.
Well, my grandson recommended Claude, and I'm going to click on it right now because it is tremendously helpful. Tomorrow, of course, is the Sunday after Easter. And Claude, you know what's special about the Sunday after Easter?
Well, we get to hear about Thomas, right?
Yeah, well, that's one thing Claude told me. Sometimes it's called Thomas Sunday. But do you know the really big fancy? Do you remember? I've forgotten because we don't use the really big fancy name. But do you remember what the really big fancy name is for the Sunday after
Easter? I don't know, Claude. Let me know.
Once I say it, you'll remember. It's Quasimodo Genitae. Remember? When I was growing up, it was always Quasimodo Genitae Sunday.
You would remember that, John.
Yeah. And what that means, again, this is all coming from Claude. It's the Latin for newborn infants. And it comes from 1 Peter 2:2, the introit. The introit for the Sunday after Easter is always like newborn infants, long for the pure spiritual milk that by it you may grow up into salvation. So there you go. If you haven't started using Claude yet, I would use Claude. Although, Matt, a word of warning, make sure you get the right Claude. This is Claude. And when I first downloaded, I got the one that's Clod, just Claude. And it's not quite as intelligent.
Claude?
Yeah. So I'll give you a sample. So I asked Claude what's special. And Claude talked about, of course, Quasimodo, right? But it said Quasimodo was the hunchback that rang the bell at Notre Dame. And it told the story about how the rope was broken, and so Quasimodo had to ring the bell by running into it with his head, and he slipped and he fell. I think he got like 11 things in, but on the 12th one he slipped and he fell, and he fell to the ground and died. And the people were all gathered around him, and they said, "Do you know who it is? Do you know who it is?" And someone said, "I don't know who it is, but his face rings a bell."
Oh boy.
Oh no. That's not Claude. That's wasn't enough for go ahead.
I think you need to delete Claude from your computer job.
So then Claude goes on to tell me that Quasimodo Genitai, who is of course the twin brother of Quasimodo, he comes up and says, "Hey, I would like to take over my brother's job in honor of my brother and all the work he did." So he too, of course, the ropes are still broken, so he has to ring the bell by hitting it with his head, and he also slips and falls all the way to the ground, and the crowd gathers around him. Who is it? Who is it? And someone says, "Well, I don't know, but he's a dead ringer for his brother." So again, do not CLOD. That's not the AI agent you want. It's Claude, CLAUDE, I believe. So anyway,
John,
there you go.
John, delete Claude. No, stay away from that.
That was a long way to go for that, wasn't it?
Oh, the punchline was well worth it, though, John.
The thing is, Lent is over. Lent is over. So this has all been pent up for 6 weeks.
I can tell.
Yeah.
We gave up our jokes for Lent, listeners, and now John is back in full force.
we want to go back. We actually started talking about Easter, the Sunday before Easter, or the Saturday before Easter, rather. I'm sorry. As we did an in-depth look at Matthew 28, and as we talked about, we did this show before we'd actually preached it. And you preached it, and I preached it both, right?
That's right, yeah.
So we're going to go back, because I don't know about you, but I as I actually worked through it in more detail, I learned a lot of things. I'm assuming you did as well. So can we just look at the text, you think, Matt?
Sure, John. You bet. Sounds good
to
me.
Anything you want to say preliminary before we get into this?
Well, yeah, just I think when you're preaching on Easter Sunday, this is just how I feel as a pastor. You know, I think it's good just to preach about Easter, right? Christ's resurrection. That's what it's all about. I don't think you have to get too gimmicky or anything with it. However, I do think it's kind of nice to have a fresh, maybe a perspective on that same familiar, same essential Easter account. So I find joy in that. As we read through this text, you know, wow, what a beautiful account. Don't want to change it. But, you know, what's a perspective with which we can look at it? You know, that's kind of how I view my preaching on Easter, at least, John.
So you said don't be gimmicky. You're maybe questioning the fact that I dressed up like the Easter Bunny?
See, I don't know. I would find that a little distracting personally, John, but okay. Maybe it worked in your context. I don't know.
Well, I was just a guest pastor, so.
Well, that's right. You can do whatever you want.
That's true. As strange as that sounds, I have noticed that I can be a little more direct in my preaching because I'm gone.
A little more freedom, huh?
Next week. Yeah. The one thing more seriously, though, that I did think about it, I wrestled with it because now you were saying that your crowd was pretty much the same, but my experience has been on Easter, you have a kind of a different crowd you're talking to, because you have your regulars, the people that come there by habit. I don't mean that in a negative way, but I mean they're there the Sunday before and they'll be there the Sunday after. But I've also noticed we usually get a lot of guests on Easter, the people that are there. Because it's a special occasion. In fact, my own family was that way. We would always have everybody in the family would come to church on that day, and then they'd come over to the house and we'd have a meal and we'd hunt Easter eggs and stuff. So I'm always wrestling with how to give a message that will fit the regular people and also fit the guests we have. And also the fact, I think a lot of people come for the same reason that the women came, and we can talk about that in a second. But anyway, I wrestled about that. And then it's interesting because actually my wife, Lynn, gave me the same advice that you just gave. She said, just preach the text. Okay. Just tell them the story of the resurrection. Quit worrying about it.
Yeah.
So I think that probably is good advice.
Yeah, it is. It is. The pressure's kind of on as a preacher though, John, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, because I don't want to just photocopy last year's sermon and use it again. Right. I want it to be unique, but again, yes, as Lynn pointed out, yeah, stick to the text. It's about Jesus' resurrection. We can't really improve upon that a whole lot, right?
That's
pretty great.
So let me make notes. So don't dress up like an Easter bunny and don't just use the thing I used last week at a different church.
Delete Claude.
Okay. I've got my to-do list made up now. Okay. Well, let's look at it. Enough of you may talk. If we're going to preach the text, let's read the text.
All right.
You want me to read? You want to read? What do you want to do here?
I can read, yeah. So Matthew chapter 28,
just
verse
give us
1.
The first verse.
Okay. Yeah, now, after the Sabbath, toward the dawn of the first day of the week, Mary Magdalene and the other Mary went to see the tomb.
So the one thing we didn't talk about last week, because this isn't unique, everybody tells us that the women came, but I speculated about why the women came. Do you have any thoughts about why the women came? You know what our dear pastor, my pastor, pointed out, Pastor Bittner, it doesn't mention the spices in Matthew. Isn't that interesting? The other Gospels talk about they were coming to prepare the body. Mm-hmm, there is absolutely no mention of that in Matthew. So I thought, well, that's interesting. But what's your thought? Why were they there?
Well, I think, you know, what we do know in the text is what they've come to see. And what they come to see? They came to see... not Jesus, you know, they came to see the tomb.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
I think that's pretty telling. So they're expecting to go to the tomb. And you know, they hope in some way the tomb can be opened and they can prepare Jesus' body for what they think at least is permanent burial. So, I mean, an act of devotion, an act of love. They're coming in love for Christ, right? No doubt about it. But they're coming not to see the risen Lord. They're coming to see the tomb. At least that's what's in their minds.
So my thought was there's probably three things going on. Number one, they're coming because they're disappointed, right? They thought they were going to be part of the new kingdom of Israel, and that obviously didn't work out. They're probably worried because they devoted their lives to following Jesus, right? For 2-3 years, they hadn't done anything but go wherever Jesus goes. Well, what are we going to do now? Because Jesus is, like you say, he's in a tomb. Well, we can't hang around here forever. So probably wondering, do we go back home? What will our lives be like now? And then the last thing that you kind of hit on there, I think they were just sad, and that's what we do. I'm sure our listeners do that, where they go to the gravesite of the one they love, they cared for, because they love Jesus and Jesus loved them. So you're right. But see, that's what struck me. I know there's a lot of people that come to church for those same reasons, because they are too disappointed. Mm-hmm. Things didn't work out because they too are worried what's going to happen. They're worried about their health, like for me, or worried about their kids. I think we really worry about our children a lot. And then again, it occurs to me that every Easter, there's probably people that aren't there that were there the year before, right? Maybe mothers, fathers, sons, daughters, husbands, and wives. And so there's probably a little bit of sadness, at least with some of the people that come to Easter. I know I always remember my grandmother every time I go, because I can still hear her singing, you know, those Easter hymns.
Yeah.
They're ringing in my ears. All right. Well, anyway, so I just thought it was interesting. Probably we have a lot in common with what the women are doing.
Yeah. And yeah, so my sermon theme, you know, as you consider, why did the women come to the tomb?
Yeah.
My sermon theme was, I mean, kind of encapsulated in the line, you know, what matters is how you leave the tomb.
That's a great one. Yeah.
Yeah. Because, you know, yeah, we can speculate about why the women came. And I think I agree with everything you said. But, you know, what in the end, what matters is how you leave the tomb. You know, we can talk about that more. But I think that's true, too, as you mentioned, as people come to church then on Easter Sunday for all sorts of reasons, like you pointed out, John. I agree wholeheartedly. And, you know, for them, too, what matters is how they leave the church, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's what matters. You know, sometimes I come, you know, out of obligation because I'm the pastor. What matters is how do you leave church? How do you leave worship, right? So the one thing that maybe could have been considered gimmicky, John, I don't know, but the one illustration of my sermon is we went to a ball game recently as a family, the Cardinals game, and, you know, we were playing the Mets, and you could tell right away, you know, who the Cards fans were, who the Mets fans were. Yeah. You know, the Cards fans were in red, the Mets fans were wearing blue. The Cards fans were all nice people. The Mets fans were pretty obnoxious. I'm joking. New Yorkers. I'm just kidding. You know, so when we came to the stadium, rooting for very different teams, right? Two very different groups. But, you know, we all saw the exact same game. We all saw the Cardinals beat the Mets 3-0 at that game. And then, you know, what really matters is, you know, then we left the stadium in different ways. You know, the Cards fans were high-fiving each other, right, after a win. The Mets fans had their heads hanging low after their loss. And so, you know, what matters isn't so much how you come to the stadium. Really, well, when you go to a game, what really matters is how you leave the stadium.
Yeah.
And so same for the tomb of Jesus. What matters is how you leave. Same when it comes to worship is what matters is how you leave. And then, you know, I think then, you know, the conclusion of my sermon, you know, what I talked about was what matters most, perhaps, is how we leave our tomb. You know, that's what matters. Yeah. So anyway, I all sorts of reasons for coming to the tomb. But, you know, what matters is how they leave. And that's where we're getting to. We'll see in just a little bit, in a few verses, how will those women leave the tomb?
So if you don't mind, let read the next, read through verse 4. Because this was a section that we really didn't talk about last week at all. And I thought, well, we maybe need to pick this up. Because, again, it is a unique detail from the Gospel of Matthew.
Okay, so through verse 4. And behold, there was a great earthquake, for an angel of the Lord descended from heaven and came and rolled back the stone and sat on it. His appearance was like lightning, his clothing white as snow. And for fear of him, the guards trembled and became like dead men. But the angel said to the women, am I going too far, John?
That's good. Just because I wanted to focus on the fact that Matthew's the only one that talks about there being an earthquake, and Matthew, of course, is also the only one that talks about there being an earthquake when Jesus dies too. So that's kind of an interesting detail. Have you ever speculated about why Matthew alone wants to emphasize the earthquake? And then I do have some speculation, but it is just that. It's just speculation.
Yeah, I mean, I would just say because of that dual connection, right? The Good Friday earthquake, the Easter Sunday earthquake, and it's a great earthquake. So it's a mega earthquake in the Greek. And, you know, in the Greek word used there for the earthquake is where we get the word seismograph, right?
Oh, yes.
Seismos,
yes,
the Greek word for earthquake. So it's this great quaking. And boy, I just think, you know, in part, Jesus' death, Jesus' resurrection affects all of creation. You know, and I think that's
a nice
important
thought, yeah.
You know, just as will his return, right? You know, because all of creation's fallen in sin. So I think just this heaven and earth shaking moment, punctuating that, well, this is the greatest event in all of history, right? Christ's resurrection from his death, his resurrection from the dead. So I think that how it affects all of creation. Yeah, incredible.
I really like that thought because, you know, the Bible does emphasize the fact that creation itself is longing for its redemption, longing for things to be set right. And that's really a nice analogy. The only thought I had is that you know, the usual theory is that Matthew is a Jew, and he's writing to his Jewish brothers, trying to convert them, trying to bring them to faith. And certainly earthquake is an Old Testament image, although it's usually an Old Testament image of God's wrath. You know, you've got God coming down on Mount Sinai and the mountain trembles. And apparently that was a very God says, if anyone touches my mountain, even if an animal happens to just wander up here, it's going to die. So that's kind of a scary thing. You better take care of your sheep. And then, of course, what's the other instance? Korah. You know, when Korah leads a rebellion against Moses, the earth swallows him up, which that's what an earthquake does. It just opens up and swallows things up. And I was thinking about Elijah. You know, Elijah just, he's, I'm the only guy left. He says, no one is concerned. No one has faith in you. And I'm risking, you know, they're going to kill me at any moment. I got to hide out in a cave. And there's a fire and a whirlwind. And again, an earthquake. And indeed, one of the Psalms says that God, the earth trembles because God is angry, it says. So that was my thought, that maybe Matthew's trying to tell his brothers, tell us too, that what happened there on the cross, that was the wrath of God. That was the anger of God. And of course, certainly it seemed that way when he cries out, my God, why hast thou forsaken me? So anyway, that was my thought. And of course, it has that effect on the guards there too, because they become like dead men. They're so frightened at the angel and the earthquake, which is ironic, isn't it? Jesus, the dead man, is alive, and the living men are acting like they're dead. But well, anyway, that was just a thought that I had.
No, I like that, especially since, you know, Matthew, again, writing the Jewish population, and it's this idea that when there's an earthquake, God's doing something.
Yep,
like,
yep,
God's
yeah.
at work. You know, and I think you can track that as you did throughout the Old Testament. Yeah, good insight.
And well, and of course, the thing is, though, that's a thing of comfort, because the wrath of God, that's on us too. The wages of sin is death. If you don't believe there's an angry God, you just wait until you're on your deathbed and you realize, oh, okay, yeah. But that's the point. The wrath of God has been taken for us. And those circumstances, we are no longer alone to face this, but we have Jesus Christ with us as well, who has suffered and died and paid for all of our sins. So, well, let's move on. If you want to read, if you would please read verse 6, 7, and why don't you do through 8, 6, 7, and 8, Matt.
All right. The angel speaking here and tells them to not be afraid. For I know you seek Jesus who is crucified. He is not here, for he is risen as he said. Come, see the place where he lay. Then go quickly and tell his disciples that he has risen from the dead. And behold, he is going before you to Galilee. There you will see him. See, I have told you. So they departed quickly from the tomb.
Let's stop right there. Let's stop there if we could, Matt.
Yeah.
Because I just want to, and we dealt with these verses actually in fairly great detail, reminding people that it's what he said. It's what the angel told him. It's what Jesus said. Because the problem with the empty tomb, like all signs, I'm all for signs, but signs are open to interpretation. So the other thing that Matthew points out, unique in Matthew, is that some people interpreted the empty tomb as if they had stolen the body. Mm-hmm. Of course, the irony is they knew he hadn't stolen the body. Their guards had reported them what happened, and yet the Jewish leaders bribed them to make up a story. And I suppose that's the story that Jews believe to this day, that they stole the body. And that is the problem with all signs. They're open to interpretation. But of course, what Jesus said clarified it, because Jesus said, I was going to suffer, die, and rise again. And that's exactly what happened. It strikes me, because I have so many signs from God, as I've talked about before. The two things that kill people today are cancer and heart disease. And God delivered me from both of those. So, well, I must be a really good guy. He must really love me. And then, of course, I turn around and get this lung disease now. So does that mean he doesn't love me? See, so I'm just saying, you just got to go to the Word of God if you want to know how God feels about you. You can't be trying to read the signs. The thing, though, that really impressed me that I had not noticed is, you know, twice it talks about him being risen. He has risen, yes. It says. But you know what it actually says in the Greek? Matt?
What does it say, John?
It says he has been risen. Mm, he didn't do it. Somebody did it to him. And I like that. I like that. My wife says, hey, you know, because Lynn reads the Bible all the time. She says, wait a second. Didn't Jesus say I can lay down my life and I can take it up? And I thought, well, he said that. But on the other hand, the Bible is really clear that he didn't raise himself. The book of Acts, it says over and over again, God raised him from the dead. And I think why that's important is because I can't raise myself from the dead. You know, if Jesus raises himself, he's the Son of God. I'm sure he can do that. In fact, it's interesting that it's the angel that rolls aside the stone. Now, don't you think Jesus could have rolled aside the stone if he wanted to? I think he could have done that.
Oh, yeah.
But that's the point. I can't raise myself. And with my wimpy arms, I couldn't roll aside the stone. You know, that'd be my luck. I'd be raised from the dead. I'd be stuck in the cave. I can't get out of here. But I always thought that was what was impressive about the fact that Jesus is raised, because he's the Son of Man. in everything he does. He's the Son of Man. Even in his resurrection, he's just being another one of us. Somebody has to raise him. Somebody even has to roll the stone away for him. And that's comforting, because that's neat to know that a Son of Man can be raised and can be set free from the tomb, because that's what's going to happen to you and me. Well, anyway, that was the thought I had about that.
Yeah.
Any other thoughts that you
have? Well, I just think, again, just along that other theme of, it matters how you leave the tomb. The women, as we see, they're going to be leaving the tomb with fear, right? But also joy, with great joy. As they go and tell the disciples. But the soldiers, they saw the same stuff, right?
Yes,
they felt an earthquake, I would imagine. They see the angel. In fact, they're so stunned and in awe, they become like dead men. And maybe if they even hear the angel's message that Christ has risen. But how did they leave the tomb? Well, they leave it, it says they were like dead men at one point. And then beyond that, they go and tattletale, kind of to the priest, tell them what happened, not in faith necessarily, but just kind of as a report out of duty. So I think that's interesting, that same event, same resurrection, and yet the women and the guards, they leave the tomb in very different ways. Yeah, same is true for us in some ways, right? Sometimes in worship, we hear the same gospel message, but I can't help but think some people leave worship differently than others, And anyway, it matters how you leave the tomb.
So let me add my own interpretation there. They have ears to hear, but they don't hear.
Yeah.
Whether those vocables were actually expressed while they were there or not, the text doesn't say. The text does specifically say, though, that the angel spoke to the women.
Yes.
And for whatever reason, then these guys did not hear it. And that's the point. See, if there are people coming to church every Sunday because it's just what we do, we just come to church. No, we need to come to church like the women. We come to church with our needs, whatever they may be, our fears. Right? That's the big word here. And then you hear, and the beautiful message we all hear is, fear not. And it's because, like you said, Jesus is resurrected. Before we're done, though, let's jump to the end, because it is what you emphasize in your text, where we go from here. So read, if you would, verse 9 and 10.
Yeah, and behold, Jesus met them and said to them, "Greetings." And they came up to him and took hold of his feet and worshipped him. Jesus said to them, "Do not be afraid. Go and tell my brothers to go to Galilee, and there they will see me."
And last week we did talk about the real meaning of the word greetings. Certainly, again, the emphasis on do not be afraid. The thing, though, that I wanted to emphasize again is this is the first time that Jesus explicitly calls his disciples, Peter, James, and John. He calls them brothers. And I wondered why only now, after the resurrection, he calls them brothers. And my first thought was that maybe they were different. But then I realized, no, they're no different, are they, Matt? They still have trouble believing. They're still thinking he's going to establish the kingdom of Israel. It occurred to me what had really changed, though, is what Jesus had changed. Because, again, I think the teaching of the Bible is he wants to be us. He wants to be a Son of Man every way that we are sons of men. But the one thing he hadn't done yet, he hadn't suffered and he hadn't died. But now he has. Now he literally is our brother in death, which, of course, is great news for us, because if he's our brother in death, then we will be his brothers in the resurrection. Well, Matt, thank you for giving me a chance to share, and you too, some of the insights God gave us here over the last week. And we thank you for listening to Wrestling with the Basics.
Showing support for KFUO is now easier than ever. You can sport a KFUO shirt, swag, or even socks by visiting our online store. Go to KFUO.org/store and order high-quality KFUO-branded merch. You no longer need to wait for our annual share-a-thon for a chance to show your KFUO spirit. Visually share and wear this ministry out in the world by checking out our selection. Every purchase helps to support our proclamation of Christ for you, anytime, anywhere. Go to KFUO.org/store.